Thank you for joining us on Warrior Women Speak. I'm Judge Rosemarie Aquilina, author of Just Watch Me, and I'm joined with my co-host, Sherry Botwin, LCSW, social worker and trauma specialist, and author of Thriving After Trauma, Stories of Living and Healing. We have created this podcast for your enjoyment and so that we all can talk about our issues and learn together about how to deal with trauma and those things that spring up in our everyday life. Please join us for every episode and let us know what you want to talk about. Now for the show. Asking for help can be as difficult as admitting you need help. And sometimes it's relearning what you've been taught. Like there are people who I know, especially as I get older and I think back about some of the lessons and things that we learned years and years ago, they have to be retaught because people are taught to keep it to yourself or keep it in the family. Oh, go work it out or work it off, run it off, walk it off. You got this. What gets in the way of asking for help is lots of things, pride, previous bad experiences, the inability to trust people, feeling like a failure, guilt, being blamed, being shamed, fear of judgment. What will my friends or family think? And Sherry, you brought to my attention, which I saw, but there's so much news, and sometimes I try to stay away from news because of the cases that I hear. But recently in Macomb County, there was a sheriff, and he stopped a man who was crying in his car. I think the man was referred to as Joe, who was on the side of the road quietly crying, and he was on his way to work. He pulled off, and then the officer noticed him and went up and said, "Can I help you?" And the man said, "I need a hug." And the sheriff hugged him and it went viral. And so many times that's all you need to do for someone is hug them. But before we get to the hugging or the answer, we first need to know that asking for help is a sign of strength. And if you need to be retaught that, that's why we're having this conversation. So Sherry, how do we get rid of that fear factor of, if I ask for help, I'm going to be judged, I'm weak, I should be able to do this by myself. That's what I've been taught, but I can't get over the hump.
I think stories like the one that you just talked about, that's how we get, how we really destigmatize and how we help people understand, like you said, asking for help is a sign of strength. I think that we live in a world now where mental health awareness is becoming more accepted and talked about. I think some of what needs to happen is, as a society, we need to recognize that there's a lot of reasons why people may need help or may benefit from getting help. I think that the other thing that I think about is a lot of times people stop themselves from asking for help because they have these assumptions or these thoughts that go on in their own mind, whether it's something that they were taught or a myth that they continue to sort of follow about, I shouldn't need help. I should be able to do this by myself. I also feel like some of it is trusting that if you ask for help, you're going to get the kind of help that you need. Because like you said, just a minute ago, some people have gone for help and have had very bad experiences. So there's a whole bunch of stuff to sort of decode in this topic.
Well, the interesting thing about this sheriff and Joe is that, you know, we've had many, many conversations about things that police do wrong and our responses and things that are going on in our communities. But we really need to focus on the things that go right, because the sheriff's office, the whole law enforcement, whatever rank they are, which department, they really are peacekeepers, and they are there for public safety and help first and foremost. And here was this man who was approached by a uniform, which can be a scary thing. And all he wants is a hug. And the sheriff, you know, they're trained safety first. And in that moment, He thought the safest, best thing I can do is something that doesn't cost me anything. It's a hug. And that man, Joe, asked a stranger for help. So sometimes, you know, if people don't have someone they can trust, maybe they do need to ask a stranger. Maybe they do need to ask someone they don't know really well, but maybe have heard good things about. Maybe they do need to go to the Yellow Pages or the telehealth and say, I need a therapist. I need to talk to someone. I don't know this person, but I know they're trained.
So the thing that's really amazing about this story is how these two come together. I was thinking about this, and this particular cop clearly has an understanding about mental health and needing and wanting and asking for help. So what happens is, and again, I don't think people think about this, but just because somebody's in a uniform doesn't mean that they are less human, less vulnerable, or have less issues. So the thing that was amazing, I think, is that the cop could feel, he could pick up on, this is a guy that's in distress. Because the guy was in distress, he wasn't just sort of crying in his car, he was sobbing. And from what I saw in the clip, to me, I felt like this was a man that was really on the edge of maybe not making a good choice about his own life. And I think what's amazing about what happened between them is the cop didn't try to fix it, but he knew something was wrong. So then when the story goes viral, and again, they don't know that this is going to go viral. The cop is not thinking this is going to be spread around the world, this moment between me and this total stranger. But I think the best part of the story is when they interview the cop and he talks about having gone to therapy and recognizing that he needed help so he could pick up on there's somebody else out in this universe that was where I was. The cop's not there now, it doesn't sound like, because he's gotten help. He's worked through, I mean, again, it sounds like from what he said in the story I watched on CNN, he's got PTSD from being a cop. He talked about how the things that I see, the things that I feel, I just needed to talk to somebody because it was starting to really get to me. To be able to say that stuff on a national television show, to be able to have these messages spread on social media, I think that makes a huge difference, because it's not like if you're a certain person, you shouldn't need help. But if you're this, that, or the other, then it's okay to get help. Everybody needs help sometimes.
Yeah, it's really a good example of becoming vulnerable is really an act of courage and strength. Asking for help is a huge gut-wrenching sign of strength, because it can be so damned difficult. But it also shows compassion for yourself, and you have to take care of yourself first. And it also shows compassion for others, because when you ask for help, you're also the model of strength, even though you don't feel like it in that moment. And you become really exemplary for those around you. So here we have two great examples. Joe, who's on the brink of, maybe I don't want to be on this planet anymore. And the sheriff, who says, damn it, you're worth it. I'm going to hug you until you feel better. And it's really just a sign of strength from both of them that they sort of become this dynamic duo for the possibilities of reaching out to another human being to save a life.
This is where I think groups and having other people to share their stories in some ways has more impact than the actual therapy. Knowing I'm not the only one that has felt this way. And I think Joe could sense that the cop really understood the pain that he was feeling. I could feel that as I watched the story. And I think that the impetus to Joe getting help is going to be from what happened between the two of them, and knowing he now knows it's not just me. And I think too, when the cop was talking about how he followed up, he actually took him to the crisis center, from what I understand. And then he was saying to Anderson Cooper, he said he was planning to follow up with him and talk with him later in the week to see, how did it go? Did you get the help that you needed? Are you off to a good start? I think having somebody just sort of be there with you. And I talk about this, and I'm writing a book now. And one of the things that I'm writing about in this next book is about sort of like, as you're preparing to ask for help, to start and create that army of support, to be able to do that before you even call a therapist, that can actually make a big difference. Because like you said, it's scary, it's overwhelming, and you don't know what's going to happen when you start really talking about things that bother you.
And once you do learn to ask for help, you really become that model to others about how to ask for help, when to ask for help, that there's no shame or blame, that it's really a sign of strength. But I think people need to learn how to deal with stress, and asking for help is one of those stress relievers, because you're sharing whatever it is you're going through. And you also need to learn, when you are thinking about, do I need help, is to, I think, ask yourself, you know, if you're suddenly mad, like I get mad at my kids and I think, oh, it's not about them, it's about something else. And just walk out of the room, even if it seems like you're mid-sentence, walk out of the room, avoid being reactive and upset, and get rid of that explosive anger. And sort of retone yourself, regroup yourself. And if you need in that moment, reach out. Everybody has cell phones. You know, dial someone and say, I'm having this like anger moment. What do I do with it? I really need you to talk me through it. So I could call Sherry or any number of people. And, you know, recognizing the need to take control and ask for help is really half the battle. And if you're feeling like you need help and you're in a room filled with people and you can't deal with things and you're out of control, just walk away to calm yourself. Call a friend. Ask for help. If that's not possible, you know, we always talk about self-care. My mother crochets. I make Christmas ornaments and bracelets, and I paint and sew, and I do a lot. I cook. And this morning I was stressed about something, so I made cookies. I mean, that was my, okay, I don't know what to do with this. I don't even know why I need help. So many things are coming in, deadlines, everything at the same time. And I thought, all right, I'm going to regroup by making cookies. It's my way of asking for help. And that was just through the thought process, but you have to reach out sometimes. There's always someone or something you can do.
If you hear yourself saying, do I need help? Then you've got the answers right there. That's the thing. If you're even thinking that question, that's the cue. That's the sort of impetus or the moment when you're actually telling yourself the truth, and to be able to follow your instincts and your intuition about what's going on. And again, when we talk about the word help, it can mean a lot of different things. Like you just said, it's not always call a therapist. Sometimes it is. I know Joe, this guy, he needed a therapist because he was having thoughts that were not something that a friend could manage. But I think that when you feel overwhelmed, or when, you know, you're talking about having all these things coming at you, sometimes just calling somebody and saying, can you just tell me that it's going to be okay? Because right now I feel like my whole world is turning sort of upside down and I'm overwhelmed or I'm stressed out. I know as a parent, I find that when I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, I don't understand what's happening, if I call or talk to somebody with a child the same age, for me, that's help, to be able to say, oh, okay, so that's sort of normal, or, oh yeah, I probably should work on that. There's not anything wrong with that. And I think as I've gotten older, I actually ask for more help now than I did when I was in intensive therapy, because the therapy taught me how to recognize when I needed to take action and when to know I'm not enough. My bike's not enough. My cats aren't enough. My whatever my outlets are, my coffee runs to the coffee house to cheer me up. Oh, no.
Coffee is always a solution. So get some coffee. Me too. You can't see this, but we're both facing mega, and I do mean mega giant coffee mugs.
Oh no, you haven't actually seen my giant one. I now have a 50-ounce thermos that I got for Christmas.
Oh gosh, I need that. Well, I see, and here's my mega water chaser, about, I don't know, 72 ounces or something, because as I get older, the more coffee I drink, the more dehydrated I am. So now I am drinking all that extra water. So it's really good, healthy thing for all of you to do. And I put in electrolytes from Propel so I can have all of them. It also means that when you drive, you have to stop and along the way, you know, where every bathroom, every department store and along the highway. So be careful of that. But I do wake up in the middle of the night more often, but I get to play with my cats. So that's okay for me too.
There you go. And I don't know, people don't know this, but you throughout this taping have been going from your coffee to your water. I don't know if you know that you're doing that, but first you sip with the left hand. Then you sit with the right. I'm thinking I should probably be having a water on my right side. So I'm going to work on that.
If you watch me on Zoom in court, I do exactly the same thing. And I've had some media people say, I have great pictures of you, but you have that damned coffee mug. I'm like, well, that's me. You know, no one's going to be offended by my coffee mug. I mean, if you want, I'll put my cowboy boots on the bench, but you know, you got to be you. So whatever it is, when you're asking for help or whatever you're doing, be you. But if you need help, ask for it. But here's a topic that is related. And you know, I have 5 children. So Sherry, you need to have 4 more.
I can barely do 1. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Michael and Marissa are nearing teenage. They're budding teenagers. They'll be teenagers.
They'll be 13 in 2 months.
Yeah.
13 or 14?
13. Oh. Yeah. So, you know, in a year and a few months, they'll be in high school. So it's a little scary, but teens around the world have been shown to be more likely than other age groups to delay seeking help. But often they need help now, and they need it the most. And we know that our suicide rates are up. We know there's cutting bulimia, bullying that it's going on that's causing need for help, immediate help. There's so many things going on, and teens don't seem to ask for help because of the fear of stigma, being judged or being labeled by their peers, by their parents, by their teachers, often by their coaches. They have this fear of denting their like cool facade. You know, I'm really cool and like everybody listens to me. But what would happen if they asked for help and they showed that vulnerability? They have fear of bullying and being made fun of. And it's not easy for teens who need help for that to be seen and to surface, because like my kids will hide in their bedrooms or they hide behind the game on the computer or in the movie room. They do things to avoid friends sometimes. And I have to really seek them out and say, okay, what's going on? Okay, let's make cookies. Let's go shoot some hoops. Let's do this or that. And depending on their reaction, I know something's going on. It's not always easy to drag it out, but we all need to be cognizant that teens need help, don't know how to ask for it. And if we just get in there even a little bit, the suicide rate and the crisis points they suffer may go down significantly.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up, because in the last 4 weeks, almost all of my referrals have been parents calling for their children, for their teenagers, 13, 14, 15. One of the things that I find as a therapist when I work with teenagers, I've got a few right now. And the thing that I find to be very interesting is the ones that actually get help are then pro therapy. So what'll happen is they'll start seeing me for therapy, and then they'll start talking to me about their friend this and their other friend that, and they'll tell their friends, you should tell your parents to get you a therapist. It's almost like a domino effect, because I think once one kid says, no, it's a good thing, then that kid shares it with their friend group. And then some of their friends end up, I can't tell you how many times I've been with a teen and the teen has said to me, my BFF or my boyfriend, can you see these people also, like they want to bring everybody to the sessions and they want me to be everybody's therapist, which obviously I cannot do. But I think that again, with teenagers being able to say, there's nothing wrong with going to therapy. Therapy is a good thing. Therapy, I'm glad I go to therapy. And what I think for teenagers is, they are very fortunate when they have parents that support them, because again, there are parents who don't allow their children to get the help. I hear a lot about that also. I've got kids coming to me saying, my best friend, my boyfriend, my friend from soccer, their parents, they don't understand. They're mean. They won't let their son or daughter get the help that they need. So that's also a conversation that I've had several times. But I feel like what happens with the teenagers when they do have this opportunity is their life moving forward is a lot easier. They're not going to struggle with some of the things that you and I struggle with in our 20s and 30s, because they're gaining insight and they're developing coping strategies at such a young age. It's almost like a gift. And I don't think it's a gift to be going to therapy, but the gifts that come from having an opportunity. And again, you don't have to go to therapy. There's kids who do groups. Support groups are amazing for teenagers, because teenagers want to know, is it just me, or is there somebody else out here that understands what I'm feeling? The impact of sitting in a room with other people, or sitting on a Zoom, or even sitting on a message board, hearing from other teenagers, yeah, I feel the same way, or yeah, that happened to me too, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, my middle child, who's now 22, and she will be 23 in November, and I've made her go into adulting. I think you all know I've kicked her out of the house and got her a condo, and we're working through all those issues. But when she was a teenager, we had issues, and I put her in counseling, much to her dismay, but she really connected with her therapist. And the interesting thing was, and I'm reminded of it as you're talking, is that she then, as one of her career choices, actually explored being a therapist for others. And I think the best therapists, like you, have gone through some kind of trauma. They've sought counseling. They see the benefits, but they also relate so much, and then they can relate to their patients better. She didn't choose to go through that path. But the interesting thing is, whenever there's something that happens in her life, her friend's life, my life, her siblings' lives, she's Googling, she's doing the research, and she'll say, well, mom, you know, and she does the sort of layperson's interpretation. But there is, if you can't reach out for help, there's so much information that you can identify with from good therapists who've written about it. And then if you want to explore it more, by all means, find a therapist. Michael and Marissa, because of the bus accident, which I've talked about, and their PTSD and stress from that, they're still in counseling, and it's been almost 2 years. And Marissa's therapist is Sarah. Michael's therapist, oddly, is also named Michael. But they really identify with them. And when we have problems at home, and I think, I'm not sure how to answer that, or will my answer cause more stress, or is this a signifier of something else? I just say, you know, we're going to therapy Thursday. Let's have a conversation with your therapist. And that has really saved me in so many instances, because I'm not trained, because that's why I rely on Sherry, because that's why I have their therapist. And I do my best, because intuitively, there's a lot of things I know from what I have seen being in the legal field for 40 years, being a judge for 19 years. There's so many things I intuitively know, but I want to get it right. And you have to rely on the professionals. So the conversations and having that avenue to offer to someone, even if it's your own child, let's have this conversation with whomever that person is, I think is really life-saving, and tells them that you care, you're not judging them, and you're providing an outlet for immediate help, especially if they don't want to talk about it in that moment.
Right. And I think, again, as parents, there are times when we can't give the help that our kids need, even therapists. Just because I'm a therapist, there are things I can't navigate as a parent that I would be able to give advice for somebody else and their child. It's so different when you're the parent. And I think that there are situations that come up when you're raising teenagers, whether you've done it 10 times, or in my case, it's my first time. We don't learn this stuff in school. And again, the times are different. The times are different now than when we were teenagers. And there's just things that whether we need advice, or we need an example, or like you're saying, we need to get a therapist that we can sit down and have some of these conversations with our kids. This year, we've been very fortunate at Andrew's school. We have a wonderful counselor, and we've had some issues at school and with teachers, blah, 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 blah. And this counselor has made a huge difference. She's made a huge difference and she'll say to me, I'm here for both of you. She's saying to me, if you need help with this, and she says it to both of us, which I think is a wonderful thing. Do I feel embarrassed or ashamed that I've been a therapist for 27 years and I need help from a counselor? Not even for a second. Because again, being a parent to an almost 12-year-old is not the same as sitting with 13 and 14 and 15 year olds an hour a week. I don't make those decisions when I'm sitting with their other children. I'm just there to guide them and give good advice and do what you're saying, be there as a witness or as a mediator. So there's nothing to be ashamed of. And this is the other thing I want to say to people. If you're someone that's sitting there going, yeah, but I've had really bad experiences, whether it's with the school counselor or a therapist, because there are counselors and therapists who should not be counselors and therapists. So people will have bad experiences, right?
Right. Or for one reason or another, you don't have to get along with everybody. Don't feel like just because they're a therapist, you have to get along with them. Even an attorney, sometimes it takes 3-quarter appointed attorneys for someone until they relate. You have to be able to relate. So there's no shame in going to another interviewing therapist, going to another and another until it fits, like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, right?
Find totally. The
one, right?
Totally. And again, like if Andrew and I didn't connect with the school counselor, we would just go elsewhere. We're very fortunate that we have that person there for us. But I say to people all the time, it's important to know therapist credentials. It's important to recognize what counselors' jobs are in the school. But at the end of the day, the most important thing, just like with this cop and Joe, is the connection, the feeling that I feel like this person is going to understand. I feel like this person's listening. I feel like this person cares. Those are the things that ultimately, like, again, Marissa and Michael probably feel cared about and feel understood by their therapist, and they feel connected. That's why they can go in there and open up. So it doesn't matter how many years experience the therapist has. I know therapists who've only been doing this work for a couple years, and I refer to them because they've done such amazing work in their own therapy. You don't have to be a therapist for as long as I have been to do an amazing job. And there are therapists who've been working 27 years who I wouldn't step foot in their office.
Right. Yeah, totally. You know, one of the things, I'm a parent. I need help practically every day with these twins. It's always and I talk about even the small things. So it doesn't have to be a big thing that you're talking about. You don't need to have a big major event to talk to a therapist or to reach out for help. There are things like respect. My kids, I feel like, and I hear this as a systemic problem from a lot of other parents. I don't know where it exactly comes from. I hate to just blame the internet, but I do blame the internet for some things. But, you know, Michael will refer to me as cuz or bra. I'm not doing that. I'm like, are you asking me for a bra? Or are you calling me cuz because you think I'm your cousin? You know, and I try to just turn it around into some kind of weird, stupid joke that he'll understand, like, hey, wait a minute, because then he calls me stupid. And I'm like, look, first of all, I'm your mother. I deserve respect. Do not refer to me as bra or cuz. And yeah, it might be cool with your friends. That might be your lingo, but it's not my lingo. And I deserve and want, and I'm asking you for respect. Well, that is not a conversation that right now is in his 7th grade brain. And so I've had to have that conversation and say, I need help with the therapist to talk about respecting self, respecting adults, respecting others, no matter who they are. And oddly enough, the conversation continues. It's not a one-stop shopping. So when you're asking for help, it doesn't mean you're going to get an answer that works magically. This is an ongoing process and conversation. But we are making some headway because I've had to make strict boundaries with Michael and say, when you do this, here is the consequence and stick to it. And he is slowly but surely learning, and it doesn't feel good to me, but I do know it's right. And when I need that help to say, is this the proper response? The therapist will either back me up or say, well, next time, let's rephrase it like this, or how about this as a consequence, but let's not look at consequences. Let's also look at rewards. So that's flipping the script for me to a degree, because, you know, on the bench, I give people consequences. I try some rewards, but, you know, with what I do, that can be tough. But with your kids, sometimes that reward method works better. And I say that the therapist has been right, that my kids react better to rewards than punishment.
Yeah. And again, it's so funny that you say that, because I'm the opposite. I work to help people give themselves self-care, reward themselves for all the amazing things that they're doing and to stop being so hard on themselves and having so many rules that are more about restricting and depriving oneself. But I think being able to sometimes get another person's perspective on what's going to work best, because you know, with every kid, it's going to be something different. Every teenager, every body responds differently. Some people need consequences. They need to be able to have parameters. And then you've got other people who have way, way, way too many consequences for things that don't really need a consequence. So this is where we come from we have such different perspectives on it. But I think being able to get that opinion from the therapist, who obviously now knows Michael and Marissa, I mean, they really know your kids. They've been working with them for a while. So that's a wonderful thing for you and for them.
So, like, here,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, another example, I think, is, and you talked about schools a moment ago. Michael, I picked him up from school and he said to me, "Mom, there was a kid being bullied." And so my friend and I pulled off the other kid from this kid. And I said, "You don't put your hands on someone, get an adult, because this can be something that really blows up in your face. And it's not your responsibility to interfere like that. I don't know what was going on, but get an adult. There should have been an adult. This was on school ground." He said, "Well, the doors were locked and so we couldn't. So we did this." And then he called me from school. And I was at the courthouse working. And he said, "Mom, I need you, because the older brother of the kid who we pulled off, the other kid who was being bullied, is now threatening and bullying my friend and I." Oh. And I said, "You walk into the school right now. This is not going to help. I can't do anything. This is not going to help you to just tell me. You need to tell an adult who's right there, and that proper adult is the counselor and or principal." So he walked into the school and the principal was in a meeting. He couldn't see her. So he got picked up then. And he told me that was the result. And I said, "Well, you know what? I will call the school in the morning." And he said, "I'm going to get in trouble because I shouldn't have done the first thing. And now this has happened." And I said, "Whistleblowers don't get in trouble." So I explained to my kid what a whistleblower was, that if you report bad behavior, you can't get in trouble. So I did call the school and say, "Michael needs to talk to you and tell you about an incident. He also thinks he's going to get in trouble. I guess that's your choice, but I have explained to him what a whistleblower is. It's a big word and term, but really with a concept, I think that's easy. And I think that you all need to sort this out. It happened on school property." And Michael was very, very, very worried that he would get in trouble. So I said, "Michael, if they give you any grief, you're in trouble. I will buy you a new football." And that probably was the wrong thing to do, but that's what I did, because he was so worried, and football is his life. So I said, "I promise you, if they ding you, I'll get you a football, because you'll be doing the right thing." So after school, I got a note from the counselor and the principal that said, "We talked to Michael, we've handled it, and he's not in trouble." And Michael, though, here's the thing. Michael, after school, said, "Well, I did get in trouble. I wanted the football." I said, "Michael, is that the truth? Because now you've told me a lie. I know differently. The school called and told me what happened, and you didn't get in trouble. Oh, can I still have the football?" So I had to put some boundaries. But, you know, asking for help from the school to intervene when you know of something is also critically important for kids who can't articulate or timely get information, or who will look in front of their peers like a tattletale or less than cool, because they're not letting some big bully pick on a little kid, you know? So there's help that's needed in all walks of life, everywhere.
I mean, that's a great story. You tell Michael, though, he better stop. He better knock it off.
Well, we had that conversation. And, I also relate it to the therapist, because I, you know, it's funny, because on the bench, I wear this scary robe. And so people listen to me. They're afraid not to. Right. And those that don't, they go to jail. There's a bench warrant and whatever. And those who do finish, and, you know, I give them the accolades they deserve and all of that. But with your kids, I'm just a mom. They don't listen. So I need the help, and frequently ask for the help from the coach, the counselor, therapist, whoever the kids are looking up to, because I can tell you it's not me.
Right. And again, like the moral of the story, and this is a great story to end with, is that this is a story where Michael, he learned two things. He learned he can't trick his mom and try, because he's trying to trick you and manipulate you. Because he's a little smacker. And he learned that, but he also learned that when I do speak up on behalf of other kids who are not in a good situation, I will not get in trouble. He learned that. He did a good thing. He did a wonderful thing, because it's very brave when you're in middle school to go to the principal and the counselor and say, I witnessed this and I just wanted to let you know. That's a brave thing to do. And that's,
and say, I sort of started it.
Right. Like he took, so
but he didn't, you know, because he didn't get help. He didn't, right. He wasn't a digital bully, but he didn't get help. And that was the wrong thing.
But he learned. Now he knows what to do next time.
Right. Important lessons, you know, early in life will carry you then into your future. Cause I see a lot of adults who take matters in their own hands. And I say, why didn't you call 911?
Yep. You get yourself in trouble. So again, while they're driving you out of your mind and saying crazy, which what 12 or 13 year old isn't driving their parent crazy, they are also learning lessons that are so valuable for their entire lives. There are people, like you just said, there are adults who get into all kinds of legal trouble and put themselves in danger when they're making choices that they think in the moment are the right choices, but they really aren't. So to be able to tell the difference between what's the right thing to do, what's not the best thing to do, how do I make the best choices moving forward? Well, now Michael, he didn't even turn 13 yet, and he already knows that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to expect a few stories about Andrew, you know, a budding teenager himself. So,
oh no, you don't even want to know the weekend. It was a weekend. Yeah. That's all I can say. It was a weekend.
And that makes you very human and a mom. And here you are, a therapist with all the answers for everyone else, but your kid then does these things. And it's a really like, I need help. Oh my gosh, how am I going to get through this? So this is a really valuable conversation. And I hope that everybody who's listening treats yourself with kindness and compassion, and you take care of your needs. And the first thing you need to do if you are feeling that there are problems is ask for help and be an example to all those around you. The model of asking for help, and you then reap countless rewards instead of the detriments of silence. So we hope we've helped you, and please join us next week. Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks for that great conversation.
You are always full of wisdom. I rely on you, my friend. I will see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Warrior Women Speak. It is truly an honor to have conversations that are difficult to have, but that we need to have. Judge Aquilina and myself are so excited to announce that we are now doing speaking engagements in addition to our podcast. To learn more, you can email us directly at warriorwomenspeak@gmail.com. And don't forget to rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen if you are enjoying what you're hearing. Until next time.